Life Issues with Vicky Gibbons on UCB One.
Today we're sharing with you another Life Issues here on UCB. I'm Vicky Gibbons, and you know my favourite psalm is 103. It reminds me of how we have a merciful and gracious God who forgives all our sins, heals our diseases, redeems our life from the pits. Yes, God crowns us with his love and compassion. Yet I'm always struck by how it describes a man's lifespan, like grass, as a flower of the field, so he flourishes, for the wind passes over it, and it is gone. It makes it seem so fleeting. Who will remember that life? When is it we start to view our lifetime differently, from counting up the candles on the cake, proclaiming all that we're going to achieve and change, to a lifetime we're looking back on, filled with memories, and counting down the moments we have left on earth? I'm joined by the Reverend Canon Ian Knox, author of a book called Finishing Well, and Carl Knightley, CEO of the charity Faith in Later Life. Thank you both for being a part of our conversation today.
We're glad to be here.
Ian, there's a Beatles classic from the swinging 60s I'm sure you're all too familiar with, When I'm 64. It's a song about life when we're older. Why is it the conversations around ageing in society seem to only ever focus on the idea of being a person of leisure, you know, once you're retired, or about financial planning?
I think we live in a very strange Western society where we've got a very sad view of older age. I go to Africa very frequently, and I find in their societies a love and a concern for older people. A respect. There's a very special word in Swahili. When you greet an older person, you say a special word and the older person replies and it means, I respect you. And the older person replies, I accept your respect. It's wonderful. And I compare that with the way we often shunt our older people to one side, put them in little retirement villages or care homes or whatever. And I think we need to redress the balance.
You are retired, you're in your mid-70s, yet here you are still writing, still talking, still offering your skills. Would you call it work?
I call it a joy. I've always called my work joy. When I was a lawyer, it was a joy to be a lawyer. When I was an evangelist, it was joy to be an evangelist. And now I still do a great deal of evangelism around the northeast and of England and in Africa. And so if that's a job, it's a very good job to have. I'm the man with the good news.
You are indeed. And Carl, your charity is called Faith in Later Life. Is it a specific age group? I mean, how do you define when later life begins? Like I mentioned earlier, I mean, for the Beatles, they were suggesting 64.
So that's a really good question. And one of the reasons we actually decided on the name Faith in Later Life, because we don't want to be prescriptive. In terms of our statistics and data that we call on, we talk about 65 because that's the government's view of older age. Although if I said that to my mum, she might clip me around the ear. We know, of course, there might be someone who's 65 who might have had a difficult time and feel a lot older. But equally, there might be somebody well into their 90s who might feel that they don't feel old at all. So really, it really depends on the person. We just want to support and empower and encourage everybody in so-called later life.
And it's fair to say that if you're an organisation like Saga and you want people to be part of what you're doing, you drop the age and it is now 50 for Saga.
When we think about this specific age group then, all sorts of words can often be associated with them. Things like fear, loneliness. Carl, perhaps you can draw on some of the other challenges that you've come across.
So I think just going right back to the beginning, really, Faith in Later Life was founded at the end of 2017 and started as a cross-charity initiative. It's now a charity in its own right. But it was set up by five Christian organisations, all with an involvement with older people, who had this real sense that actually in church contexts, there was tons of stuff for younger people and families, but not quite the focus or the resources for older people or for churches to think about how they reach out to older people and support their older congregation. So we think about the obvious things like living with dementia. We think about death and dying. We think about evangelism. We think about caring. We think about intergenerational activity. So there's a whole plethora of things that really, as Christians, we need to be thinking about, not just the negative stuff. Of course, there are huge challenges around loneliness and isolation, which, as Ian says, are far worse now with coronavirus. But equally, the words that I think about when people say older person or older Christian certainly are wealth of wisdom, life experience, prayerfulness. So there are tons of challenges, and society is quite ageist in the way we think about older people, but equally there's much blessing and positive adjectives, as it were, when it comes to older people.
Aging is a process, though, that God designed. So what's the difference? Looking at aging through God's eyes, can Jesus really relate to people who reach and experience old age?
I think one of the joys of writing this book is I've looked again at how God really does see older people. And God has a totally different viewpoint from pretty much everybody else in the world. He sees older age as being something, and you were referring to Psalm 103, Psalm 92 talks about bearing fruit in old age. Now, I've got three of my 10 grandchildren staying with me at the moment. And the night before last, the younger two, our little Bible reading with them in their Bible notes was about the fruit of the Spirit, of love and joy and peace and so on. And it was marvellous for me to be able to share with them how you can go through your life with that fruit. And I could speak as an older person, grandpa, to these beautiful children and say to them, this is how your life can be. And it isn't just young people saying, oh, I want to be like that. It's an older person saying, actually, that's the way you can have your life. Because I trusted Jesus when I was a boy. And now here I am at 76, still trusting Jesus and knowing the fruit of the Spirit in my life. So the blessing of being an older person, being able to bless the younger generations, is an enormous privilege, which I delight in.
Carl mentioned a moment ago how we are still sadly quite often an ageist society. We attach those negative labels of weakness and frailty and vulnerability to older adults. And yet, as you've just described, so much gift and fruit still to offer. So is it society limiting this generation, or actually is it also partly older adults accepting those labels that are attached to them?
I think there's truth in both of those. I think as far as us older people are concerned, we do get more tired, and it is easier not to do something than to do something. So it's easier just to say, I've done my bit, I've played my part, it's now another generation's turn, rather than seeing that we have a lot to contribute. But I think also society, and I'm sad to say, quite often the church has this negative view. So if you said to any minister or leaders of a church, whatever the denomination, would you like 50 new people in your church? Every church leader is going to say, you bet your life, give me 50 new people. But if you said, actually, they're all over 70, then what's the reaction? And the reaction is going to be negative. And that's really sad, because we older people quite often are the ones with the time. We've certainly got the space to pray. We've got the wisdom to see how things can move forward. And unless we're fuddy-duddy stuck in the mud, we can actually encourage the church to move on and into this most exciting new millennium. I had a grandmother who died at 101, and she was always encouraging me. When I came from a very professional family, if you know what I mean, everybody did professional jobs, lawyers and so on. And I was a lawyer. And then I got to when I was, I really felt God's call for me not to be a lawyer, but to go branch out and be an evangelist. And I was married then with three children. We now have four. And I was absolutely terrified as to what the rest of the family would say. And I went to see my gran, who was 95 years old at the time. And I said, gran, I'm going to stop being a lawyer and I'm going to go around telling people about Jesus. And she took my hand and she looked me in the eye and said, Ian, that's wonderful. And because she said that at 95, nobody else in the family dared contradict her, because she was the supreme head of the family. And so the encouragement of somebody aged 95 enabled me and the next but one generation to get out and do what I'm doing. And to her enthusiasm was so wonderful. And we need to see that the offering of older people is the opposite of what society thinks we can offer.
Your grandmother sounded flexible, though, and you touched on a moment, there are those sometimes, particularly in our church communities, who lose that adaptability, if you like. They become known for being set in their ways. Is it possible to overcome those challenges as a church community together?
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I think it's done with love. I think it's done with encouragement. I think it's asking them what can be done and how they can see us moving forward, and to get them on board and to feel that we have and to let them feel they have a part to play, but not to dominate in such a way that it spoils the progress.
This is Life Issues. It's really good to have you listening to UCB today. My guests are Ian Knox, who has a background as a solicitor, evangelist, and is canon missioner at All Saints Cathedral in Bora Bora, Uganda. Carl Knightley is also sharing this time with us. Carl is the CEO of the charity Faith in Later Life. These past few months have been a real shock, a real time of change across the generations. What's your experience been like, Ian? The whole labelling, being over 70, being the first age group really to experience lockdown?
I find it quite hard. I felt it quite lonely. And I felt deprived of a ministry which, because of my age, I'm not likely to be doing in 15 years. So I'm losing chunks of opportunities, so I found it hard. The second thing I found was how amazingly liberating it was in relationships. I live in a lovely village in Northumberland by the sea, and we have a road where we live in the last house of a close. And there's probably about 20 or so houses in our little area. And some of the younger ones set up a WhatsApp for our area. And the friendships we have established right across all the generations. We've had two babies born in our little close in these last few weeks. And we've been able to take presents to families we didn't know before the lockdown. But we've got to know them, and they've become our friends, and we've taken the presents, and they're massively grateful. And equally, we've got a lovely retired clergy lady who's lost her husband in the last year, and she's very lonely, she's entirely on her own, and we've been able to be involved with her and talk with her. And on Easter Day, my wife and I went and stood outside her house and sang two of the great Easter hymns, and neighbours who never, ever, ever go to church came and stood with us and sang, all at a safe distance. And my wife has been taking her a wonderful Sunday lunch every Sunday through the entire lockdown. So we've looked at the positive, and there's been a lot more positive than negative.
Has it at all been overwhelming, though, when you hear so many of the statistics around how at risk you are of coronavirus because of being in not only perhaps having certain underlying health conditions, but being in a certain age group as well? Has it made you more aware of your physical body and the limitations as you age and get older?
Yes, it has. And I have a big challenge because I have my last visit to Africa has had to be postponed a year, but I'm due to go to Kenya in November, and at least one senior member of my family is advising me very strongly not to go. And I was talking with my grandson just last night. He's 11. And he was asking me about going to Africa. And I said to him, I can either sit and rot here and do nothing, or in November I can get on a plane. If I get coronavirus and I die, well, I've had a long, long, good life. And if I live, well, then I've been able to go and bless people. But just sitting here rotting is not doing me much good at all, or anybody else much good. So I've sent an email to the bishop just before we came on air and said to him, Thank you for the revised programme, which is taking coronavirus into consideration. I'm delighted with it, and I'll be coming out to see you. So it's not bothering me, because, I mean, at the moment, the death rate in Britain is not just through coronavirus. The death rate in Britain is 100%. I don't know if you knew that, but 100% of everybody in this country dies. And we have this crazy view of death, that it's the most appalling thing and the worst thing that could ever happen. My Bible seems to say to me it's one of the most glorious and exciting things that will ever happen to me, because I will move from worshipping God to actually seeing him. I'll move from Jesus being my Saviour and Lord to saying hello to him. You know, this is a pretty cool way to spend looking forward. So if I live, I live to the Lord. And if I die, I die to the Lord. And so if I live or I die, I'm the Lord's. I know I'm quoting from the Bible, but I'm looking forward to living as long as I do. And I'm looking forward to dying whenever I do. It's the way we've got to be. We've got to be positive in this.
And it sounds like it's the disciplines, though, the rhythm of faith, as you were talking about earlier, the singing, the prayer, the worshipping, being able to offer service still through whatever ways that you can. I mean, not everyone obviously being able to maybe travel to Africa, but finding those moments of sacrificial giving within your community has really encouraged you.
Yeah, and I think also having it's an attitude of mind. When I walk for the paper in the morning and I'm feeling really, really low because it's the only walk I'm going to get in the day, and my wife's gone off to work as a nurse doing the swabbing at the moment for coronavirus, and so getting people to be safe for their operations. And I know I'm going to spend the day on my own. I'm feeling, oh, blow this for a bunch of bananas. I actually look at the sea as I'm walking along, and I say the words in the Anglican service, lift up your hearts. I say it out loud, and then I say, we lift them to the Lord. And you just let us give thanks to the Lord our God. It is right so to do. And I just, you know, give myself a bit of a smack and say, come on, Ian, get your life together. Jesus is real, and he loves you in the hard times.
Carl, what's your experience been like through those that you've been interacting with during lockdown?
I think much of what Ian has said has been true in our context as well. With the older people that I've been interacting with, there have understandably been feelings of being low and frustrated as well. You know, there are many older people, so-called, who are very active and want to be getting out and can't. And there are those who live on their own and who are quite frail, and that fear sets in. And I think one of the things that I think there are lots of positives. And like Ian, we've discovered new relationships and friendships in our cul-de-sac. One of the things that me and my kids did was we put leaflets through everyone's doors just before lockdown, introducing ourselves as a family and saying, you know, if there's anything you need and you're an older person, give us a call. And so we found positives in this situation, and really trying to model to the rest of the road what it looks like to reach out to older people, you know, as Christians. But I think my mum is she's in her late 60s, so it's technically an older person. She's a widow and she lives on her own, but she's on our road, and even with us being able to wave at a distance initially, she's said she found it quite difficult not having anybody to speak to, because she couldn't nip out to do X or Y or Z. So I think it's been a very difficult time, and continues to be a very difficult time psychologically, if not medically. I think in my context, it's been even more so because my wife, like Ian's, is a nurse. My wife's a nurse in intensive care. So we've seen the impact, or she's brought it home a little bit. But I think really in my final comment on this is really just agreeing with what Ian said. It's given older people and younger people, actually, whatever younger people means, an opportunity to really focus in on our personal relationship with the Lord Jesus. Because we're not going to church. We don't have that church building or tradition. We've got our Bible still, though, you know, and so we can actually think about, you know, this times might feel very hard. You know, there's that passage in Philippians that says, don't be anxious about anything, but in everything through prayer and petition, you know, bring your requests to the Lord. And so I think that it's a wonderful opportunity for us to really just zero in on our relationship with the Lord. And there will be some who want to just crack on and don't really mind what happens. There'll be others who will be more afraid. And I think everyone has a personal choice. But in the midst of that, we must know and be reminded of our salvation. And so as churches, it's so important for us to continue to reach out to our older members to encourage them and to encourage them that wherever we are, we can never be far from the Lord.
And Carl, for some families, of course, it's changed the dynamics, hasn't it? Grandparents hugely involved, perhaps, in childcare arrangements, normally on a day-to-day basis prior to lockdown, and then suddenly losing that gifting that they would normally offer to the family.
Yes, and you know, and again, I can speak from a personal context, because until recently, when my mother bubbled in with us, as they say, my kids couldn't go anywhere near her, and prior to that, she'd had them 2 days a week. And I've got a little boy who's six and a little girl who's four, and they really dote on Granny, like Ian was saying, when he got the all clear from his grandmother. You know, and my mum really is the kind of the spiritual matriarch of the family, and she doesn't pull any punches. And so when she says stuff, it really makes a difference to my kids. And so she found it very difficult not being able to give them a hug. Very, very difficult. And, you know, and I think that's been very painful for many people. And many older people, Christians or otherwise, might see their primary role as grandparents, you know, and carer and so on. So I think that has been very difficult. It's good that that context has changed for some people at the moment, but we really can't underestimate the impact of the loneliness side of things, and particularly when those dynamics change. And actually also, as we think of the value of older people in that support context, it really impacts young families when we don't have granny or grandpa to help and support as well. I can testify to that from our perspective also.
You mentioned there about loneliness. Of course, you've been very active in the Daily Hope line. Just remind us, what exactly is this? Why was it set up?
So, as we were knee-deep in lockdown, a small group of us came together. It was really God's work. There was no initial pre-plan. And I found myself in a virtual room with a couple of colleagues from Lambeth Palace and a couple who are involved with leadership at Holy Trinity Claygate in Surrey. And we came together and created this idea of the Daily Hope Initiative. So really, it's led by the Church of England. And the reason that's been helpful is they obviously have the reach. But Faith and Later Life came alongside them as the charity partner, if you like, and together alongside the Cramers at Holy Trinity Claygate, we launched the Daily Hope phone line. And the reason we launched it was we were aware that there are lots of older people who weren't able to Zoom or who weren't able to go online to their church service. 2.5 million people over the age of 75 have never used the internet. Now, of course, there are many people who have, so this isn't, we don't want to discourage older people from trying to use WhatsApp and online. We want to encourage that. But we want to acknowledge there are those who weren't able to and therefore who were profoundly lonely and isolated. So the Daily Hope phone line is an opportunity for you to phone up. It's free from any UK mobile or landline. You phone up and you have a series of options. You can listen to just hymns on loop. No text, no talking. So the idea there is anybody, whether they're old or young, actually, whether they're Christian or otherwise, can just have that comfort. But there are other menu options whereby you can listen to a service, you can listen to prayers, reflections. And really, we just wanted to ensure that through the solid medium of the telephone, which, you know, everybody has a phone, don't they, is an opportunity for people to know the hope that comes from knowing Jesus Christ. Whether they're an older Christian who can't get to church online or whose church doesn't have an online provision, or an older person otherwise, or someone who's not older, but is just really struggling or otherwise. It's been a great success. We're still going. The Daily Hope phone line has surpassed well over 200,000 calls, totaling over 2.5 million minutes. And so we're really keen to continue that provision as churches start to slowly lock down. We still want to say, actually, churches do need to be thinking about their older people. This isn't instead of local church, but at the same time, we want to make sure that there is no one anywhere who doesn't have the opportunity to know the love of God over the phone.
You're listening to Life Issues as this week we explore the pressures of older age and living through a pandemic. The Reverend Canon Ian Knox, author of the book called Finishing Well, and Carl Knightley, CEO of the charity Faith in Later Life, are my guests. Let's focus on care homes, the idea that they've been cast aside during the pandemic. MP Meg Hillier, chair of the Public Accounts Committee, she said that they were effectively thrown to the wolves. The deaths of people in care homes devastated many, many families. That idea of separation, not being able to be with loved ones in their final moments. care homes not being prioritised compared to the NHS. What does that say about our society?
I think that today, actually, a report came out from Birmingham University from a professor there. And one of the things that the report suggests is that funding in adult social care has been underfunded to the point of £2.5 billion since 2009 and 2016, which indicates the lack of attention to adult social care and care homes. And so adult social care has always been the poor cousin, the poor relation compared to health. Mm. And I think now that's been painfully obvious for all to see. And like Ian and I were actually mentioning earlier, this ageism piece, it would be unfair to suggest that all of this whole catastrophe is because everyone's ageist everywhere. But we have to ask serious questions around the priorities we have as a society. And, you know, whilst we're wanting to, we were having this mantra all the time about protect the NHS. And that's really important. As I said, my wife's an intensive care nurse. I'm really keen on protecting the NHS. But, you know, the handoff between NHS and care homes was just, well, it wasn't there, was it? You know, my wife's got a grandfather who's 94 in a care home, and he caught coronavirus and he came through it. But nevertheless, the way care homes have had to receive older people from hospitals has, I think, been very bad. It's easy to bash people over the head, but there must be some sort of inquiry. And I think it does hark back to, you know, how are we really valuing older people? And I like to be positive like Ian, and I hope this leads us to really think of as a society about reframing the way we see older people and the importance of older people. And it doesn't just become a clapping on Thursday night sort of scenario, because we've got to do better.
As you say, I mean, it has been chaotic. We've had green and white papers by successive governments, no real clear way ahead for social care, despite our ageing population. As a Christian community, what is our responsibility? What should we be doing, saying, praying for a situation like this?
I have the advantage that I'm 76. And the advantage of that is that I'm not at the centre of things as Carl is, with trying to really make things happen nationally. And I really value the way Faith in Later Life is doing this tremendous work of highlighting the needs of older people. The great joy of being really old is that you realise you can't influence anymore. You can't influence, I can't influence the government, I can't influence the church. Because I'm a retired, because I'm ordained and retired, I'm not even allowed to be on the PCC of my church. I can't even be on the church leadership. I can't even vote for the church leadership. That's the rule of the Church of England. And you know, that's amazingly liberating. I wave goodbye to my wife, who's the church treasurer. She goes off to these wonderfully exciting and thrilling, and I know how much she loves them, PCCs. And I sit at home and watch the telly, and it's just glorious. So I view this from a different way from the way the media views it in yourself, and the way Carl views it as part of an organisation that is brilliantly working to help older people. I just look at it and say, so what can I do? In other words, I don't neither know nor understand what the government is doing, nor what the health service is doing, nor what care homes are doing. All I can do is say, well, what can I do? And the answer is, I can be friends to the lady up the road whose husband died in a care home, and I can be a really good friend to her and inspire and encourage her and enthuse her not to lose her faith, but to know the love of God. And if I can do that for one person, then I've done something. And I'm seeking to do that in my life. I'm seeking to be the one who brings the love. I wrote a book in 2002 called Older People and the Church. It was quite an academic book and was sold worldwide on the relationship between the church and older people. And that's why I was asked, one of the reasons I was asked to write my new book called Finishing Well. And one of the things I've tried to say in my new book is that there are things that each of us can do, whether it's helping others or it's just being who we are. One of the things I've tried to say in Finishing Well is that we are, many of us, stuck with what we used to call the Protestant work ethic. In other words, if you're not flogging yourself to death, then somehow it's that prayer which says, teach us, good Lord, to serve thee as thou deservest, to give and not to count the cost, to fight and not to heed the wounds, to toil and not to seek for rest. For goodness sake, if ever there was a prayer which was against the truth of the Bible, that's the prayer. And everybody loves it and everybody says it, and it's a load of rubbish. Somehow we need to learn to be more than to do. And that's what I've written a whole chapter on, who we can be as we get older, before the chapter that says what we can do. I'm finding a strange thing with my grandchildren. They run around like absolute scalded fleas. I've got 10 of them, and the oldest is 15 and the youngest is 4. And they seem to have energy like I don't remember having that much energy. And here's the strange thing. They just want me to be me. They just want me to be their grandpa. They don't want me to kill myself playing football. They'll go and play the football. 7 of them are boys, 3 are girls. And they'll go and play the games. They just want me to enthuse them and encourage them and love them and be their grandpa. That's what they want more than anything else. And I think we need to rediscover the joy of who we can be in older age and then find the things we can do. So I've just, during lockdown, I've written a book for my grandchildren, Story of My Life. It has 131 chapters, and none of them is more than about 2.5 pages of A4. And I've got 3 of them here with me at the moment, and I'm reading them chapters every night, and they're absolutely hanging on every word. And all I'm doing is sharing my life with them, and they're loving it. And the other thing I'm doing is I'm sharing Jesus with them, because I'm saying how Jesus has helped me from when I was their age all the way through to my age, and the difference that's made, and the way he's guided me and helped me and seen me through hard times. Some have got a mummy who's not very well at all, and my mum died when she was 45. Now, I'm not trying to equate the two with them, but I'm letting them know that I understand what they're struggling with mummy and her not being well. So just because I've got a lifetime of experience, I've written that in the book to say, this is who you can be. And when you talk about care homes, I've written a whole chapter on how we can care and how we can care for the people who care, which is another major forgotten thing, how we can care for the carers and what we do with Alzheimer's and how we help people who have Alzheimer's and how we help people who have Alzheimer's, if that makes sense.
Help us understand that idea of working out how to be, Ian. Identity is often drawn from what we do or have done, your own labels like solicitor, evangelist, because a moment ago you referred to yourself as being a grandparent, another label. So what is your identity that gives you the firm foundation for where you're at and just to be?
Okay, my firm foundation begins in this. I am a true son of my Heavenly Father. That's who I am. And I think in the rushing around in my earlier life, I often forgot that, even when I was an evangelist. I didn't really know the fatherhood of God holding me and loving me. And I've discovered that in my later years, and that's been a precious thing. So having established who I am with God, I then established that I'm the neighbour now who puts the bins away on a Thursday. So we all put our bins out on a Thursday and I wheel them back to the houses. So I'm a neighbour. I am rediscovering, because I now have more time, that I'm a husband. We've been married 47 years. Which I realise for some people is not very long, but for some it's getting on well. I am a father to sons who are now in their 40s and who have all the pressures. One's just lost his job because of the virus and is looking for another one. And all the others are struggling with an enormous amount of work. One is in general practice as a doctor. And he just needs to know I love him and I'm cheering for him. And my grandchildren not being able to go to school, having to learn at home, very hard work for parents and children, and I'm learning there as well. So I'm discovering who I am as a person, which enables me to be what people need me to be, because God enables me through his Holy Spirit to be all those people.
This is UCB's Life Issues with Ian Knox and Carl Knightley as we explore together how understanding God's vision of ageing may help us care and serve alongside each other better, especially at a time of national crisis. Ian, church has been different. It's been a time of transformation and we continue to live with COVID-19. What do you think the priorities should be for churches as they seek to develop relationships with older adults at this time?
We need to be aware of them. That's the first thing. And I think this crisis has helped us to be aware of them. I think the church, as Carl was saying, having set up his wonderful phone-in with his colleagues, I think we've seen the need to be there for them. When I say them, of course, isn't that strange? I'm 76 and talking about them when I should be talking about us. And I think also to enable church to move forward, I think we older people have a responsibility now to make church better. Better for people who haven't been. The number of people who've been tuning into radio programs like yours and who've been tuning into church services all over the place. It's something almost like a quarter or more of the entire population has been on watching services and listening to services. And we need to be people who will make church accessible to the millions who've not been involved in church until COVID, and to make our church welcoming and loving and understandable, so that we have a way of sharing our faith in the church and coming out from the church.
And Ian, there are so many characters in the Bible who God uses in later life. I mean, there are so many to explore. We've got Abraham, you've got, you know, Eunice and Lois and how they inspired Timothy's faith. You've got so many of us that we could talk about, Elizabeth, Zacharias. Do we need to actually, maybe a good place is to go back and revisit those stories and connect with them as a church community collectively?
Well, I hesitate to push my book one more time, but I've written an entire chapter on the heroes and one or two who were the zeros of older life. Because you're right, there are loads and loads. And we need to see that we haven't stopped. God will tell us when we've got to stop. God will say, thanks a lot, Ian, come home. And then I'll go home. But until then, there's things to do, people to see, places to go, life to live, a Lord to worship and to serve. I'm excited about getting older. It's really good.
And Carl, for you at the moment, what are the priorities as you ease out of lockdown?
I think we've got so much we can look forward to. And the church has to be different now. I don't think we're going to go back to how things were before, perhaps nor should we. The priorities are really making sure that churches continue to think about their older people. And older people have been forced into the limelight in this terrible way because of the pandemic. But actually, at the very least, at least we're thinking about our older people now where we might not have done so before. So, I always say that there are many churches who are doing good things with older people. But if every church did so, if we reframe the way we see older people, then society follows. And it's that bit that Ian said about just in our own context, how are we interacting in our neighbourhood with our neighbours? So we can think about prioritising how we live our lives individually. Strategically as a church, how do we do that? Thinking about older people. And then actually, how do we see mountains move as a result of that? But it's so important that we recognise, either for the first time or reminded again, of the importance and absolute wonder and value there is in older people and older Christians and the part that they play. Because if we don't have anybody to aspire to, whether it's Abraham or Daniel or whoever it is, in human terms, things get a lot more difficult. We can't just survive on our own in a silo. And so as we move forward, my heart and my prayer is that actually we are thinking about how we can bless each other, old and young, and young and old.
Carl, remind us, how do we connect to the work of Faith in Later Life?
So you can just come and see us on our website, faithandnaturelife.org, or just Google Faith and Nature Life, and on there will be a phone number as well. Or you can just phone up the Daily Hope phone line as well. That's a really another really good thing to do. The Daily Hope phone line, which is free from mobiles and landlines in the UK, is 0800 804 8044. And if you don't think it's for you, then please tell a friend or a neighbour so we can bless each other. If you're listening, wherever you're listening, we have a lovely Church Champions network. We want to support older people and empower older people. And so we've got a network of Church Champions across the UK and beyond. Why don't you join our network and we continue to journey together, because we want every Christian and church to be equipped and inspired to reach, serve and empower older people everywhere. And so everyone knows the love of Jesus and the part they have to play.
The Reverend Canon Ian Knox, author of a book called Finishing Well, and Carl Knightley, CEO of the charity Faith in Later Life. Thank you for being my guests here on UCB.
Thank you. Thank you very much. God bless you.
Thank you very much. God bless.
You know, as we've been sharing experiences and learning from one another today, beyond retirement and health, which is how society and the government so often define later life, there is an opportunity to embrace being, as Ian said, overdoing, to not only retain your faith, but see others recover lost faith or even discover it for the first time in later life. For others, the pandemic may have brought deep suffering to their final days. But as Ian refers in his book to a Kenyan service where the leader calls out all our hopes and the congregation raises their hands in the air to say, we set on the risen Christ. We are not going nowhere. We are heaven bound. And that surely has to offer us everlasting hope as we consider aging well.